Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Do you know that every car comes with a chair of stories? That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few simple questions. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas. Hey, it's Todd. Before we get started, if you like what you hear or you have any questions about this podcast, please tweet at me at @Todd_Garner on Twitter. Look forward to hearing from you.
For nearly 30 years, Todd Garner has overseen blockbuster films like Con Air, Anger Management, Triple X, 13 Going on 30, and Black Hawk Down.
Why are they letting you make these movies?
Join Todd as he shares tips and stories from the front lines of producing in Hollywood.
I'm Adam Sandler.
I'm Rebel Wilson.
This is Jeff Probst.
This is Marlon Wayans.
I'm Eli Roth.
Hey, it's Ed Helms.
This is Shay Mitchell.
Hey everybody, this is Kevin James, and this is The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
What a combination.
Music and cinema have been completely intertwined since cinema was created. Even when movies were silent, they had orchestras in the orchestra pit playing songs to evoke the feelings that you were supposed to have while watching the screen. And really good music, it runs parallel to the images. It can lift the images up and create emotion that even the images can't create. My next guest is a master at making people feel things. Diane Warren and I have worked together on several movies, Coyote Ugly, Pearl Harbor, Armageddon, to say the least. She also wrote a unbelievable song for Con Air, which took a movie about convicts and actually made it feel like a romantic movie that by the end you were like, well, of course he has to get to his wife. And women saw this trailer and heard this song and thought, well, that movie's for me, even though 98% of it is convicts trying to kill each other. Music can do that. And Diane is better than anybody else that I know at taking a story, internalizing it, and writing the song for that specific story, as you'll see in our conversation, making it general enough that when the song lives outside of the movie, you can put your own interpretation of what that song means into it from your own life story, which is absolutely genius. And I didn't know that she had done that until we had this conversation. She's one of my favorite people. She, if you follow her on any sort of social media, you know how amazing she is and how opinionated she is and how funny she is. And so hopefully all of that comes through in this interview because I think she's amazing and I'm very lucky to call her a friend. I hope that you have as much fun listening as I did talking to her and as much fun as I have being her friend. Enjoy.
Hey, everybody, it's Lisa Lampanelli, the former queen of mean of comedy, and now I'm the queen of meaning. I am absolutely thrilled to announce my podcast, Let Lisa Help. No, it's not exactly a comedy podcast. It's not exactly a self-help podcast. It's something in between. New episodes weekly on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com. If you don't listen, blame yourself for your horrible life.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
This is The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
All right, I'm here with Diane Warren. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Todd.
I have to say, you and I have been friends for a very, 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 very long time, but not to date us.
Yeah.
But I think the first time we worked together was in 1996 on Up Close and Personal when I was at Touchstone Pictures.
That's a long
time. And then we've done Con Air together,
yep.
Armageddon together, yep. Coyote Ugly together, yep. Pearl Harbor together.
We had some...
That's a lot.
That's a real lot. You know how many nominations we had on that? Oscar nominations? Because You Loved Me, Up Close and Personal, How Do I Live from Con Air. I Don't Want to Miss a Thing from Armageddon, and Pearl Harbor.
Jesus.
There You'll Be.
We have 10.
Four, so four of my Oscar losses
four of your
were
10.
With you.
Four of your 10. I got to say, it's 10,
yeah.
And every year I get excited for you. And every year I always text you and say, this is the time.
I know.
This
yeah.
is the time.
Yeah.
But let's back up a little bit, because you and I have been friends, and I got to say, in researching you, it's f***ing daunting. You are a legend, and you're the work ethic that you have, which we'll get into, but you've written songs for over 100 movies. You have
yeah.
10 Oscar nominations. You have 15 Grammy nominations.
How many wins do I have?
That doesn't matter. It's just okay. being nominated.
No, it's
Diana.
Awesome. No, it is awesome. Go on. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
You're in the
you.
Songwriter Hall of Fame, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so you and I have something in common. We both grew up in the Valley,
yeah.
in the East Valley, not even in the Good Valley. I grew up in San Fernando. You grew up in Van Nuys.
Yeah.
And then I went to John F. Kennedy High School, and you went to Mulholland.
I got kicked. I went to Mulholland Junior High. I got kicked out of there. Then I went to North Junior High.
You went to CSUN.
Yeah, I got kicked out of two junior highs. I don't know. Somehow they graduated me. Then I went to Mulholland, which
yeah.
I took up nothing. I mean, I just
sure.
cut class the whole time and smoked pot with my guitar. And
by the way, you can get into a lot of trouble in Van Nuys in San Fernando.
I did.
Me too. You can meet
yeah.
some unsavory characters
yeah,
hanging
did.
Out on the street in San Fernando and Van Nuys back in the day.
I tried my best to do that. And then I dropped out. I went to Pierce for a couple years, and
right.
I dropped out of CSUN.
Right.
Then they gave me some honor.
Right. But like, CSUN is
Distinguished Student Alumni Award. Really? I used to break into your practice rooms and I
didn't they give you a key?
They did.
So you didn't have to break
Which
in anymore
nice
when you got the honor?
Yeah.
So let's go back real quick because we have a lot to talk about.
Okay.
But first thing I want to say is you have really been wanting to be a songwriter for a long time.
Yeah.
You really started in earnest at 14.
I started before that.
And you have had this crazy work ethic of
yeah.
just writing song after song after
yeah.
song after song.
Still,
and to this
yeah.
day, you still
yeah, yeah, yeah.
write every day. You have to write a song a week at least,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah.
And so,
in fact, I was working on something and you interrupted my
song. I'm so sorry.
Today,
I'm sure it's going to be amazing.
Okay. I hope
and so you then wrote songs, you got into songwriting, you went to CSUN, you taught yourself how to play piano.
Yeah.
You taught yourself how
yeah.
to write songs.
Yeah.
You've taught yourself how to play your 12-string guitar that your father bought you.
Yeah, I don't write on that as much. I have other
the
guitars.
Piano was really the thing that kind of turned you around.
Yeah,
you
piano. Found out I still write on my guitar as well. Like I'm writing something on guitar now, but the 12-string. I mean, you should see what your fingers look like after playing that.
And you famously have said you didn't want to perform, but I've heard.
No.
I probably have heard more Diane Warren songs sung by Diane Warren.
Poor thing.
Than anybody, because you always would give us the demos.
Yeah, yeah.
Before the artist would, and you're great.
No, I'm not that good.
Well,
but thank you.
I think you're. Great.
I get the point across. I certainly don't intimidate a singer.
And so you really started.
I wish I could sing as good as Diane. That never is said.
You really started your career at Arista, correct?
I was signed to this German producer named Jack White. Not White Stripes, Jack White.
And he was really the one that got you to own your own publishing because you didn't own your own publishing and had to sue him to get your own publishing.
He sued me because it's a long story.
It's okay.
You
we
know,
got time.
But you know what? I love him at the time. I didn't
right.
like him very much. But I wasn't a bad deal. But, you know, in hindsight, I didn't deserve a great deal.
Right.
You know? And then I had Rhythm of the Night and I recouped, you know, a million times over and he wouldn't renegotiate. And I'm like,
So what is it like when you decide you want to be a songwriter?
Yeah.
Did you, like, I got to imagine, and this probably is not true, did you write, like, great love poems to people?
No, I never did that.
Your writing is so incredible.
No, I didn't write love poems to anybody.
Where did it come from?
You know, I don't know. I just had a desire to do this, and I did the work, you know. And I listened. I kind of grew up hearing, you know, in a golden age of pop music.
Sure. You
know,
Motown, so, you had the Beatles.
Yeah. Like, you know, how do you learn from
right.
anything better than that, you know, and just songcraft, you know. And I've always been a sponge, so whatever is, you know, even now, like there's certain things in rap that in my phrasings,
right.
you know, that I use and stuff. So I go, wow, that's kind of cool.
And also, anytime you've ever got a dinner with any friend you've ever had, you come away with a song from their breakups or from their
yeah,
own.
Oh yeah, that's Risa.
Oh,
our,
I know.
Our mutual friend.
So Risa Shapiro is a very good friend of both of ours. She is Cher's manager. You have
yeah.
collaborated with Cher on over 20 songs.
Yeah, yeah. Cher's done more songs of mine than.
And is that how you met Risa?
No, I met Risa somewhere else.
Wow.
Like, you know, but it's just kind of funny because one time we were like, I never go on vacation, but it was the Humane Society. I bought like a villa. I didn't buy a villa. I bought like a week for me and some of my friends.
Sure.
So six of us went, and Risa was one of my friends that came. And she was going through a bad breakup at the time. And I was writing this really sad song. So I said, Risa, come in here and listen to this. And she started, like, hysterically crying. And I go, oh, that's really good. She goes,
that's perfect.
She goes, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? I go, I know the song works. You know? So.
So what do you remember? I know that when you were at CSUN and Pierce, you watched a lot of movies.
Yes. And so, I was almost like a film major at CSUN.
I got to say, because you write. I mean, obviously you write a lot, but you've probably written more for movies than anybody else on the planet, for sure.
I write a lot. I mean, I write for artists, too.
I know.
But I do write a lot of songs for movies.
And so you saw early on when you had this bad deal with Jack White, you saw that you needed to have your own publishing.
To be honest, it was just kind of, you know, he sued me because I wanted out of the deal. And I was kind of like, I just had my first hit, Rhythm of the Night, so all these people wanted to sign me, and, you know, the big companies were all coming to me. And, you know, someone was offering me $1 million. I had no money.
Right.
It was like, I want to be a staff writer, blah, blah, you know. And then my lawyer was like, no, you can't. You know, you have to keep your own publishing, because if you sign with somebody, they'll be part of the lawsuit. And I was like kind of bummed, but then I thought, you know what? It's not such a bad idea to own that. And I came up with, you know, Real Songs.
Which is your publishing company.
Yeah, which is a great name.
And you to this day own all your own publishing.
I do, yeah. I own all my songs.
And you produce all your own songs.
Well, I don't produce all of them. I write them. Produce them.
And own the publishing.
Yeah, I own the publishing.
Do you remember a specific movie?
And I write them mainly myself, so.
You're right.
That too. So.
Do you remember a specific movie or a specific song that really got you charged that you can call back and say, first of all, what was the song that made you go, oh, there's people that write songs? There was a single,
I kind of knew that because I'd see people's names.
In the parentheses.
Yeah, I did, you know.
And knew that that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I knew I wanted to be there.
And do you remember a specific movie that made you think, I could write songs for movies?
I mean, I didn't even think of that at the time, but I remember being really moved by songs for movies. Like, I remember seeing To Sir With Love.
Right.
You know, when I was a little kid with my mom and dad.
Right.
And hearing that song, I just was blown away by it. But
and you,
you
was
know,
your
or the Beatles, like with Hard Day's Night when I was little.
For sure. You know. And was your first big hit the song for Mannequin?
No, my first big hit was...
No, I mean for movies.
No, Rhythm of the Night was in Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon.
Right.
You know, so that was my first big hit was from a movie.
And do movies then come calling once you've written a hit song for movies? Does every movie then come calling and say, "I'm writing a song for my movie"?
I mean, some people did. I think it made things easier.
Right.
I think more people would come to me for songs. You know, and then Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now was maybe a couple of years later. You know,
number one everywhere.
Yeah, big.
Also,
big song.
Your first Academy Award.
Yes, my first nomination.
Right.
The movie about a guy f***ing a mannequin. Yeah.
Now, walk me through that process. So did you get the script for that? Did you see the movie? Or did someone just say it's a movie about a guy f***ing a mannequin? And
nothing's
going to stop us now. She's a mannequin.
Of course.
Who can stop us?
Who can, yeah. I mean, like, who can, like, you know. But that was a song that I wrote with my friend Albert Hammond, actually.
Right.
I think it came through Albert's publisher that told us about the movie. I think we saw it at the time. I can't even remember because it was a very long time ago.
Right.
I don't think we read the script. I think we just saw the movie. And we kind of came up with, let's write a wedding song.
I mean, that song's
the guy marries the mannequin he's f***ing.
That song's amazing because I'll tell you, all of your songs are that way. I mean, I cannot
Thanks.
Have anybody talk about Con Air, Armageddon, or Coyote Ugly without popping the song immediately saying the song is the thing. And I'm
That's
still
cool.
And look, we get – so – you watch the movie, you write the song. How did you – let's jump ahead for you. You're in my relationship because I'm fascinated by how you even did this. So the first one was Up Close and Personal.
Yeah.
And it was a Celine Dion song.
Yeah.
Did you read the script for that or did you see –
I saw the movie. I remember and you know, Donald DeLine.
Yeah,
who was
my boss.
Friend of ours. You know, I met him at a party. That's how that whole thing happened. Sandy Gallen passed away.
Sandy Gallen was a manager. He was Dolly Parton's manager.
Yeah, just loved him.
He then became a huge producer and a manager of so many artists.
So many artists and just a great guy. And I went to lunch at his house. It was on a Sunday. And I met Donald. I was telling like some kind of dirty joke that he loved. That's how we met. And he goes, you know, there's a movie that you need to know about called Up Close and Personal. And he gave me whoever the head of music was at the time, who didn't call me back.
It wasn't Kathy Nelson then.
No, that was before Kathy Nelson. And he didn't call me back. And so I thought, you know what, this. You know, let me get the director's number. I mean, that's just how I am.
So huge.
I mean, when doors are closed or whatever, for whatever reason, I just go through the window or go under the house. So, you know, I got John Avnet's number and called him. Took him a little while to call me. You know, I'll call, called him a few
That's
times.
So amazing.
He showed me the movie on a Friday, and on Saturday I came in, and that chorus just wrote itself, and I was like, holy shit, this is like probably my best song.
Wow.
You know,
so let's
at that
go.
Time.
Let me dissect a little bit.
But it took him 4 months to pick my song. There was other songs.
And it was just your demo then? Celine hadn't recorded it?
Yeah, Celine hadn't heard it yet, I don't think.
So of all the demos, it took them 4 months to pick yours?
Maybe it was less than four. Maybe it was like a couple of months. It felt like a fucking year.
Well, on Diane Warren's
time. I just started therapy. I know,
By
I'm
the
so
way,
impatient.
In 4 months, you had 19 other songs written, I'm sure.
I mean, yeah, I probably had other songs, but I really now, wanted that, you know?
So, you don't have to answer this question. Do you sometimes see a movie and go, oh, I have a song already written for that?
Or? No, I honestly try to write something new.
Wow.
You know?
So, I want to go through all of these.
Yeah.
So, you see Up Close and Personal, you go home, and then you always write the music first, correct? Did you have the music?
That title and lyric kind of came with the music.
Wow.
Like, I just started writing that song. I was just like, I remember I was crying writing it, you know, and yeah, it just kind of wrote itself. And I remember just being...
I read somewhere that your dad had something to do with that.
I mean, it was like my way of saying thanks to my dad for believing in me.
So
you know, like, because her character, Michelle Pfeiffer's character, you know, thanks Robert Redford's character after he passes away. And then the weird thing, I mean, I'm happy for it, but it became a wedding song.
Right.
You know, and a funeral song. So
wow.
You know it's a hit.
You were my strength when I was weak. You were my
So let's talk about your dad for a second. So your dad really believed in you.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he you know, bought you this $500 guitar, this 12-string guitar.
Yeah.
He built you a shed in the backyard to practice.
That's because they didn't want to listen to me play one song over and over for 10 hours.
Yeah. What do you think he saw in you?
You know, I think my dad, in a way, was a frustrated performer.
Mm-hmm. He was an insurance salesman, correct?
Yeah, yeah. But I think, you know, after he retired, he worked at this theater and would go over the lines with the actors.
Oh, right.
I'd play him a song. He'd go, like, you need to sing it. I'm like, Dad, I'm not going to end up singing this song,
just, right?
You know, but you know, yeah. My dad really believed in me. My mom was like, you know, go, you know, that's a great song. Go, take that to Ralph's and see how many groceries.
You probably
they
could
give
have
you.
If you would have stood outside of Ralph's. You probably
you know?
Could.
No, they wouldn't have at the time because I was nobody. But you know.
Were you performing your songs for your family? Like, how did your dad know you were good?
I don't know. He believed.
But Diane, I've heard your demos. Did you were you recording your songs, or were you just having written down?
No, I don't even know how to write. I don't know how to write it out.
Wow.
You know, but I was recording them on tape or whatever.
That's
just
amazing.
Trying to go to publishers, they'd all slam the door on me.
That's
you know?
Amazing.
And I'd be like, I was a little arrogant, little asshole.
How many songs did you finally have written and recorded by the time you got to Jack White?
I don't know, a lot.
That's incredible.
A lot, and you know what? You know, he did take a chance on me, and through him, his publishing was through Arista.
Right.
That's how I was kind of signed through that. And, you know, through that, I got Rhythm of the Night.
Yeah.
So there were really good things. And I had dinner with him a few years ago.
Right.
You know, and I was like, thank you so much, you know.
Well, that's, let me tell you something.
You know, it's a break is a break, right?
Yeah. And that's a testament to just not giving a shit and doing it yourself and just keep recording.
But I'm like, that's how I am now. Like, I just, you know.
But even
I just
then,
had to film a video. I'm not going to say what art. There was an artist that, like, literally was the label hadn't had their shit together. And I had to like, and that's a whole long story. And that's not just the label. I'm not even going to say the label. It wasn't even the label's fault. It was like so many other aspects of what was going on. This artist literally was here for one day before going to, you know, out of the country.
Right.
Like, and I literally found out that somebody didn't like the video treatment on a Sunday night. I'm like, what do I do? I had to like, you know, get a director just to shoot her.
Right.
And then I'm sure it's all going to work out. But
I will.
Know.
I want to go back because believing in yourself and recording all those songs and not giving up and sticking with it, and then your dad taking you to the publishing.
Yeah.
We talk about this all the time on this podcast, which is you just need one person.
Yeah, one. You know,
just one person to believe.
I always say that every one yes is a f you to every no that came before it.
100 no's probably before.
Yeah, to every no. Yeah, because you just need one person to say yes, or one person that sees it.
So.
And most people are stupid.
So I am in 1997. I am a vice president of production at Touchstone Pictures.
Right.
I work for Donald DeLine.
Yeah.
And I with Donald, we come up with this movie called Con Air.
Right.
We then, Scott Rosenberg writes the draft. Kathy Nelson comes and she becomes head of music for Disney and Touchstone.
Yeah. And we love Kathy Nelson.
Oh, she's amazing. And I am introduced to you. And I have a movie about a bunch of convicts stuck on a plane.
Just sounds like just perfect for a love song, doesn't it?
It's the most amazing bait and switch I've ever been a part of.
Do you know the story about that?
No, that's why we're going to tell.
It's really a good story.
But first, right now, before we do anything, let's listen to a little bit of Trisha Yearwood's
Okay.
How Do I Live? Because that was what was in the movie.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about the fact that Leanne Rimes also, and we'll listen to that.
Right.
And then we'll talk about how the hell you got two Grammy nominations for the same song.
Oh, which I forgot about that.
Which is incredible. So this is a song from a movie about convicts that get stuck on a plane and threaten to kill everybody.
Yeah. Perfect for a love song.
Okay, so that song comes at the end of the movie.
Yeah, after
they've crashed the
plane. A lot of things have blown up.
Garland Green has escaped, and he is a mass murderer.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been impaled.
Yeah.
He has a bunny, hands it to his wife.
Yeah, and then, of course, you need to hear How Do I Live.
So how? Walk me through it all.
Okay, so, you know, yeah. Okay, so I went to see Jerry Bruckheimer. He showed me the scene, you know. I wrote How Do I Live.
He showed you the scene of Poe giving Hummingbird with the bunny.
But he talked about, he kind of walked me through it.
Sure. Jerry's a great salesman.
Yeah, yeah. And he really hated me at the end of this. No, but then he loved me again in the next year. But I go and write the song, you know, probably 200 songs, you know, written for the movie. So I happen to have the same publicist as Leanne Rimes at the time. And Leanne was 14. She just won Best New Artist. I run into her at a restaurant. Now, never one to miss an opportunity, I said, Leanne, and to her dad, Wilbur, I said, you know, I wrote the song for Con Air. Well, I did write the song for Con Air.
Right.
It was one of 200 songs written for Con Air that wasn't picked yet. But I said, so come over and let me play you the song. And you know, if you like it, we'll work it up.
1 second. Before you go on, we'll play Leanne Rimes' version. Yeah. 1 second. Walk me through coming up with the idea. How do I live?
I don't know. I just wanted to write like a really
power ballad, love song, which was
amazing. And I just thought it was a really great song, you know.
And was the theme of this guy trying to get home to his wife
resonating? I just wanted to be like where it could be they both were, you know.
Right.
Where she could. I mean, you know, I kind of put my you know.
Right.
Blinders on and just try to write a great song, you know.
Well, you did.
I mean, thank you. But wait, so let me tell you the story.
I'm not going to stop you.
So I say, you know, you want to hear the song I wrote for, you know, that's in Con Air?
In the movie?
Yeah, which wasn't.
In this great scene?
this great scene about a bunny and things blowing up. But it was a great song. I played it for her. She loved it. She came in my studio and recorded that, right? Loved the song. She sounded amazing on it. Now, remember I said it's the song in the movie. They go home. They go back to, you know, Texas and spend $100,000 on a video and an orchestra. And, like, they just go crazy. Remember, it wasn't picked yet. But when, you know, she just won the artist, the Best New Artist. So she was a hot artist. You know, she was at the time, you know. I played it for Jerry, and Jerry goes, great. I love it. But
okay, hold on. So let's listen to that
version
of the song, which is the first time I heard it.
Okay, yeah. What's interesting
is
they're so different.
They are.
Both those versions, like Leanne's is like this innocent young girl.
Right.
Trisha's like more lived in.
Okay, so Jerry hears
great.
The song.
So Jerry loves the song, right? And he goes, I want to change some things, you know, for the scene. It's a little too, little twangy, some of the.
A little country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can we take some of it out? And you know, you do that in movies, right? You just, okay. And I tried to talk to Wilbur, her dad/producer. And he goes, I'll try doing a Wilbur imitation. I ain't changing nothing for them Hollywood people. I go, Wilbur, you don't have to. It's just for the scene. It's just, you're going to have your record. Your record's great. They want to use the song. I ain't changing nothing. I go, but it's, I couldn't
Jerry
convince him. But I couldn't, he didn't get it, right?
Right.
He didn't get that his record would still be great, but for the movie, it would just be, have less, you know, steel guitars or whatever.
Right.
So, you know. None of them would budge. And Jerry goes, you know, and Leanne, again, she was like the hottest artist at that time. And Jerry goes, do you mind if Trisha does it for the movie? I go, only if I can't pull it from Leanne. They've spent $100,000. And of course, I'm thinking she's going to get on pop radio more than Trisha. Trisha's more country.
So ironic, you know, right? And we feel like Trisha would be more country than Leanne, but just the way the song came out.
Yeah, it's – I mean, so – anyway, so I said, yeah, as long as you don't make me pull it from Leanne, because I can't do that. So he calls me, he goes, fine, that's fine. A couple weeks later, you need to pull it from Leanne. I go, I can't. He goes, if you don't, I'm never working with you. You'll never work at Disney. And he speaks, you know, Jerry speaks really softly.
Still, it's quiet.
It's very quiet, and it's very scary. He's not yelling. He's talking. And I remember being on the phone at my house and crying.
Oh.
Like, you know, I go, oh, no, I'm not going to ever work at Disney. And but I didn't know a way out because I couldn't pull it from Leanne. And Trisha was going to do it for the movie. And then what happened was Mike Curb, Leanne was on Curb Records. He wasn't going to put the record out, and I convinced him to do it. And I was like such a little sneaky little bitch. So I said, look, she's going to have more of the pop hit. You know, Leanne is going to get on pop radio. Trisha won't. Just put it out at the same time.
Oh,
so that was my idea.
So great.
And they all hated me. So Leanne hated me because Trisha did the song. Trisha hated me because Leanne did the song. Kathy Nelson hated me because I made her life really bad. Jerry Bruckheimer hated me. And then the song became a hit for both of them. And
for everybody.
They all started loving me again.
And they loved you so much, we went right into Aerosmith, which I talked to.
He hated me until a year later.
That's right. So that song becomes the cornerstone of the campaign. Yeah. It is – you cannot turn on a radio without hearing both versions, by the way.
Right, right. And they did, and they were in the same key, so some people Frankensteined them.
Sure. And you get nominated for 2 Grammys for the same song by 2 different artists.
Well, they did. I mean, actually, I didn't.
And
they
won?
Both. Trisha.
And Trisha won.
Yeah, Trisha won. She sang it on the Oscars.
It's amazing.
You know, I mean, it's crazy. But Leanne, I think Leanne's version's a little more known.
By the way, Leanne comes back into the picture in a second, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll get there in 1 second. So then I am still at Touchstone Pictures, Michael Bay and Jerry.
Who I'm talking to about doing something right now.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he's got a lot going on. Jerry has got a lot of movies.
No, Michael.
Oh,
actually.
Bay?
Yeah, I just talked to him
for the
Friday.
New Ryan Reynolds movie?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So... Yeah. So they come to you for Armageddon.
Yeah.
And walk me through, did you see the movie? How did Jerry present it this time?
I'm trying to think. I think it was like he walked
me through
it.
He showed you a couple scenes of putting the hand up.
Things blow up in space.
But there's a part where she puts her hand on the screen and cries, and there's an animal cracker scene because that was all in the video.
Animal cracker scene.
So walk me through coming up, because that is just
– I thought that song.
I remember Aerosmith played it at the premiere, which was in Cape Canaveral,
I was there.
Florida.
It was amazing. Oh, my God.
In Cape Canaveral,
and that was an amazing. That's the best.
I benefited from that movie because we were promoted, Nita Jacobs and I, right when that movie came out. So it was like.
As you should be.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was Mike Stinson all the way who started that movie. So, but walk me through kind of the idea,
I'd had the title.
Really?
Because I got the title from something that someone had told me that James Brolin had said about Barbara Streisand.
Wow.
They didn't want to fall asleep because he'd miss her. You know?
Oh, that's amazing.
And I had that title. So I wrote the title down. I hadn't written the song, but I wrote the title down. And then when I was walked through the movie, I thought, you know what? The world's about to end. What's better than I don't want to miss a thing? You know, it had so many – it had different meanings. So I wrote it, you know, and thinking – never thinking Aerosmith would do it. And that's all Kathy Nelson. That's 100,000,000% Kathy Nelson.
And that one I think I did – the reason why it stands out to me is this is the first time I think I heard you do a demo. Because the first time I heard Kathy – I'm sorry, the – How Do I Live? I think I heard the Leanne Rimes song, but I think this was the first where you did the demo.
Yeah, I think I did one of the versions of the demo. You might have heard that.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you know, look, Kathy said I'm going to get Steven to do this. I go, you're not going to get Steven Tyler, but you know, he saw the movie and it was like his daughter losing her father,
right?
And it really touched him, and he loved the song. So they ended up doing it, and it became their biggest hit ever.
They
probably love and hate at the same time.
Every moment spent with you. Moment I treasure.
And again, it becomes the cornerstone of the campaign. Again, yeah.
Well, it was smart, you know.
He's always been that way. You know, think about Top Gun, Flashdance.
Yeah, those were great. I love Flashdance.
I think the thing that Jerry is so good at is finding a way to make the movie bigger than just what it is, making it in the zeitgeist, making it a cultural phenomenon.
And what's better than a great song to do that?
Yeah, and that video, you know? And then all of a sudden
that video
Liv
awesome.
Blows up, and then, yeah. and then she's all over the place. But that really became...
That was like the perfect, you know, like textbook case of synergy with a song in a movie.
Yeah. It also tells the audience, like, it's not just for guys. Yes, we're going to blow a lot of shit up.
That's what I always say.
But there's a love story.
Yeah, there's... Okay, girls can come too.
Right.
You know.
And enjoy it.
And the girlfriends will bring the boys, and the boys will go.
So this leads us to my favorite story. So I am at Touchstone Pictures, and I find this bar called Coyote Ugly in New York City.
So you came up with that?
I didn't come up with it. It's a real thing.
But you came up with the idea of doing the movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I went to Susan Lyne, who was a big-time editor and publisher, and she was just at the studio in a producing deal, went to her. She found the article. She found the writer, got me
– Did Gina write the article?
No, it was Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. Got the article, and then – basically wrote this movie about this place where these girls are dancing, and there's this girl, and she comes, and the real story is the the woman who owns the bar, Lil, is just this incredible story. And Kathy and I instantly said, we got to have Diane do the songs.
Wow.
for the Piper Parabellum character.
Yeah.
She was going to be a songwriter.
Violet
instantly said, we have to do this. And so this was our first real fun, you being really instrumental and being involved.
Yeah,
in the
I remember going out with the guy, the director, talking to him, about like, so some of the stuff was based, there was some stuff they got from me, like being shy, stage fright.
It was so great. And you remember the woman who was originally supposed to sing that song with Donna Lewis, who sang the song I Love You Always Forever. And Jerry was not having it again.
No, Leanne was smart. I think that was Kathy's idea.
And then, boom, Leanne comes back.
So smart.
And all bridges and all fences are mended.
Yeah.
And
see, you'll work in this town again, even when they tell you you won't.
And so what was that movie? What did that mean to you? And
I love that. You know what?
You injected a lot of yourself in there, because I remember Piper – talking to
me and Piper and Tyra too. We want to do Coyote too. We do.
Jerry Bruckheimer.
Gina Wenkos, where the f*** are you?
Jerry Bruckheimer, get on that. Yeah. They probably will now that they have the streaming service.
Smart, you know?
So
it should be a Broadway show.
So we tried. So walk me through, like, you put so much of your own personal stuff in there.
I mean, some of it, you know.
Obviously not all of it. But walk me through kind of the process of that, writing all the music for that and recording it and being a part of that. And also the weirdest moment in probably cinema history is – that's a huge overstatement. I take that back. A weird moment is Piper Parabellum lip-syncing Leanne Rimes singing with Leanne Rimes.
Yeah, that was weird.
So weird.
That is – I never thought about how fucking weird that
it's
is.
So weird. And it's both Leanne Rimes.
Right,
and she's singing.
She's lip-syncing to herself.
And so is Piper Parabellum.
That's really interesting.
Everybody was lip-syncing to Leanne Rimes that day.
I remember being there when they shot that. And I had another song at the end that when I saw – like I saw the movie earlier and I go, God, that song doesn't work. I didn't want to say anything. And then they realized later when the movie was just about to come out that it didn't work. Do you remember that?
There
was another song.
Yes.
And I literally had to – like I think you guys put it in there like a week before the movie was coming out.
Yeah.
Like something – I don't know how you did it. You guys – Franken. That's why we had to do that last scene.
Yes.
Because the movie was done.
Leanne, yes, because the movie ended and then we needed an ending. So we got Leanne Rimes to come on and sing with Piper Parabellum
on
the
song,
bar.
Yeah, that was a new song that I just did.
I know.
Quickly.
Let's play Can't Fight the Moonlight by Leanne Rimes.
All right. Can we
steal?
So that's 2000.
Yeah.
So that's 3 years into our relationship.
Yeah.
And how many songs did you write for that movie?
I think there turned out to be four.
Four of them, yeah.
There was a fifth, the one that didn't work.
Right.
You know, that was replaced by Can't Fight.
And have you written that many songs again for another movie? Or is
that
the max?
I'd like to do it again.
Yes.
I'd like to, even do more, But there's something fun about doing like one song and getting the f*** out too. But I would love to, if another thing, you know, came to me that was like that.
Right.
You know, where I could write, you know.
Like a whole movie.
Songs. Yeah, that'd be fun. I would hate to, I'm not built for the kind of thing where it takes 4 years.
Right.
Too impatient.
Well, you write all the songs that are perfect for a musical. So somebody out there will snap you up now, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are coming to me for that. You know, but I'm more interested in a movie musical.
Right.
But someone's actually doing one with my catalog.
Oh, Broadway. Really?
Yeah.
That's so smart.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. It's going to be cool.
At Broadway.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So we'll see what happens, you know.
So a year later, Michael, this is my last movie at Touchstone Pictures, Michael Bay, Jerry again.
Yeah.
Do Pearl Harbor. What did you see from that? Because you have the – there you'll be.
I read the script, but there's a funny story with that one too.
Go.
Like a Jerry Bruckheimer – like funny Jerry Bruckheimer story. Michael Bay, the two of them. So, you know, Jerry had me rewrite – well, I read the script and I had a different title, which I don't remember what it was. I wrote the whole song and Jerry didn't like it. He said, rewrite it, you know, and don't give it to an artist before you
– Don't play that. Don't pull the Leanne Rimes card with me.
What is the first thing I did? I sent it to Faith Hill. Like, whatever. Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear you. I don't know. And so I sent it to her, and she really liked the song. And then he made me rewrite it so many times, like, to where – and he never liked anything, you know? Like, never – nothing was good enough. And I remember – and Hans Zimmer was so cool. Like, he really helped me because he helped me redemo it to make it fit the movie. And I remember there was a screening, and then there was a meeting at Hans' studio with Michael Bay and Jerry and everybody. And so I had my one chance. This is my last chance to play the song. If you didn't like it, it wasn't going to happen. He goes, I still don't like it. Michael Bay goes, I do. So it was like this father-son thing. It was interesting. Like this kind of, you know, and Michael was so cool. He goes, what didn't you like? And then Jerry goes, oh. He was like, he didn't know what to, 'cause I don't know. And then Michael goes, I like everything. I like that song. I want that song.
Where did the title There You'll Be come from?
It changed. It's something that was a similar title, and then it became that. But I just thought that was a really a great thing, you know, a great image.
And what was the inspiration, the theme behind this song for Pearl Harbor?
You know, after he's, you know, Josh Hartnett's character dies. So it was kind of like when he flies in the plane at the end with his kid, you know, and they're all flying. And I just thought that would be a nice, you know, way to end it. Another big funeral song.
There you'll be. You write funeral and wedding songs for Jerry all the time.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Well, let's listen to a little There You'll Be.
In my dreams, I always see you soar above the sky. In my heart, there'll always be a place for you for all my life. I'll keep a part of you with me. And everywhere I am, there you'll be.
So
that's one of my favorite songs.
That's so great.
Thank you. And I remember getting a cassette of it, and I was in therapy at the time. I remember like sitting and listening to it like through the whole therapy session.
Is that a good idea for you to go to therapy given the songs you write? Shouldn't you just try to stay as f***ed up as you possibly can be to write them?
I'm still – no, it didn't stop me being f***ed up. She wasn't probably a very good shrink. But no, I mean, but I remember like listening to it and I mean, I love that song.
It's a great song. Why?
Thank you.
When you have these ideas like Leanne Rimes and Faith Hill and where do they –
I thought, because to me.
Do you hear the song is in your voice or do you hear this?
No, I try not to.
So,
no, so what it is it's to me, casting an artist for a movie is almost like casting an actor or an actress, right? So, you know, Faith Hill could have been in that movie.
Right.
Right. You know, Steven Tyler could have been Armageddon. Leanne was in Coyote Ugly.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're it's almost like they're part of that.
I see.
Like it's not foreign. Like they could have. You know, they're another character in the movie.
And when you write the lyrics, are you seeing the movie play in your head? Like, how does that?
I just do it almost like I see it.
Because you're a very visual person.
I am, but then this computer turns on, and I just go.
And just lay it down.
Yeah, I just go with it.
That's incredible.
You know, and just try to write a great song, which is what I do anyways, whether it's a movie or not. I try to write something great.
And I know that Marshall used your song as score.
Yeah.
Has that been done before?
Yeah, that has. That was really used well.
But
and
before what other movie has used, like in Titanic, they used obviously the song and the score.
Yeah.
Can you remember any other movies that have done it?
Not offhand. I think it's been done. Oh, you know, Coyote Ugly.
I was going to say.
You know, a lot of that score was my song.
Right.
You know, was instrumentally my song.
Right.
But, you know, it's great when they can do that, you know, and Marshall was done really effectively.
Well, let's jump ahead then to 2015, where kind of your latest run of these kind of not just power anthems, but really, you know, about a lot.
Yeah.
How did the Hunting Ground documentary come into your world? And then obviously Lady Gaga, you guys did, she recorded the song Till It Happens to You.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
You know, Bonnie Greenberg, do you know Bonnie?
No.
She's a music supervisor, a good friend of mine. And she had told me about the documentary and I saw it. And I thought, you know, and I started writing Till It Happens to You and I was like, wow, this could. And by the way, when I write a song from a movie, I want it to be perfect for the movie, but I want it to live outside of the movie.
Right.
I never said what it was.
Right.
Right? I never said miss a thing, what was the thing you're going to miss.
Oh, that's
right?
Interesting.
So I always kind of leave things open.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Which is why your song can be a funeral song and a wedding
exactly,
song.
Yeah, exactly. See?
Wow.
Got to think ahead. but so with Till It Happens to You, I remember, you know, just kind of coming up with that and just, you know, it was so deep. Like, really, I thought I was writing, I thought, this is one of my best songs. And, you know, I'd heard that Gaga had – and by the way, the directors didn't want the song.
Oh, wow.
They didn't even know if they wanted Gaga. I'm like, really?
Wait, this is so huge of a pattern for you.
Yeah.
Where somebody says,
welcome
no, you just
life.
Go to the artist and you just do it yourself and figure, fuck it. If they don't like the song, I'll have a hit.
Yeah, exactly. I don't.
And that's good for anybody who wants to be in this business in terms of writing something, laying a track down,
making a movie.
But I think
most successful people you will see that tendency.
Yeah, just not take no for an answer.
Yeah, you can't
do it.
You can't.
And why? Okay,
so Gaga had been on Howard Stern like recently talking about how she'd been sexually assaulted.
Right.
And I'd met her and we talked about let's do something together sometime, right? So I called her, I texted her, I said, look, I have something to. You need to listen to right now. Call me, like now. She called me, and I go, look, I hope I'm not, you know, I know you just talked about a really personal thing. I want you to hear a song I wrote for this documentary about rape, about sexual assault. And I played her the song. She was crying, you know. She was like, she couldn't even talk. She was like sobbing on the phone. And she goes, you know, I really want to do this. But
you have this effect on a lot of people.
I know. I like it. And so I'm a sadist. I'm a song sadist. So she goes, I need to talk to my manager. I'll let you know by tomorrow if I can do it. So I didn't want to wait. I got on a plane. I went to New York.
Oh, God, Diane.
You know, I thought,
you're
know what? If it lands and it's a no, I'm going to have a couple of days in New York, have some fun and whatever. Fuck it. So I landed and it was a yes. And so we went in the studio. I went over the song. I taught her the song. And she had a lot of ideas, like how she wanted to produce the record, and just hearing her sing it, and it was amazing.
Well, let's hear it. You know? Let's listen to a little bit, Till It Happens to You.
Yeah, great record. She,
so
you
great.
Know, but yeah, so, you know, but they, okay, so this
was that
story.
Your first documentary you had done?
Yeah. Wait, I think so.
And you have another documentary that we're going to talk about.
Wait, let me tell you the story with
that.
So they didn't want the record to come out. It's another case of me not taking no for an answer.
Right.
So, you know, Gaga loved the song, but, you know, her label, her manager, they you know, I think she was doing American Horror Story at the time, right? They didn't really want the record to come out. It was only for the movie. You know, and I remember being really bummed, but not letting my depression over it get in the way. I thought, you know, what are we going to do? We need a video. So I kind of like under the radar went to my friend Catherine Hardwick. You know, I got it financed. One of the producers, Paul Blavin, helped get it financed. I put in my own money.
Wow.
Catherine Hardwick put in, you know, almost 10 grand. I put in 10 grand. All the actors, you know, Nikki Reed, everybody did this for free. I mean, Gaga wasn't in the video. I don't even know if they knew this video was being done because everything was getting shut down with the song. Like if we tried anything, no, it can't come out. So, again, not taking no for an answer. And this video was actually brilliant. And then they wouldn't let us call it a video. It had to be called a PSA, which like, oh, come on. To me, I think that was an Oscar-winning short, really. What Catherine did with that was a genius video, you know, the whole when you really watch that, mm-hmm. watch it again. It's really brilliant. And so we found a way, me and my friend Bonnie, another Bonnie, Bonnie Abunza. She's really does a lot of the social justice stuff, and she knew a way to get it leaked. So there was, I think, an article in Hollywood Reporter, Variety, about, you know, something about that the song fit, and the video kind of slipped in there.
Right.
And it went crazy, and I also sent it to Oprah, and she loved it, and she retweeted the link.
Jesus.
And the thing just, like, literally in 2 hours, it had, like, 6 million, 7 million views, like, literally that fast, you know. And everybody was really mad. Again, that's my theme. Everybody gets mad at me.
Well, by the way,
you know,
it's worked for you in every.
Yeah. Okay.
Until it doesn't work, you probably won't stop doing it.
No, I'm not. And then, no, I mean, I remember her manager, like, who I really like, I'm friends with now. And he calls me and he's like, we know it's you. And like yelling at me and stuff. And I was like, no, it's not me. My nose started growing.
Can't prove that.
You know, but then I go, you know what? You should be saying thank you, because, like,
yes.
The thing was, like, the next day it had 20 million. I don't know what it was. Like, the thing was going crazy, and everybody was talking about it. You know, it got a life of its own, you know. That performance of Lady Gaga on the Oscars was truly – I think that's the best thing I've ever seen.
I agree.
You know, with those kids with the running
around. It was unbelievable.
It was stunning. And you know, that's the one year I kind of thought I was going to win.
Well –
You
all
know,
of them.
And the winner is what?
Oh, all of them you should have won.
Not all of them.
In my opinion.
Not all of them. You know, that one, I think, you know, that's the one I thought.
And so did Marshall come looking for you after that? Or
well,
how did that
Marshall
come
was really random. I had...
Nothing is random with
no.
you, Diane.
Yeah, I know, but...
You seem to always be at the right place at the right time. And if not, you'll go there.
Okay, well, I'd written a song... That Andrew Day did for something else, and it's a long story. I'm not getting into it, but the director, everybody wanted the song in the movie. The director, you know, was kind of a dick and didn't want it. And I was, you know, I was so excited about it, but, you know, and it would have been, I think, a really big hit and really worked for that movie. But so I was like, literally, like the next week, I was having lunch. It was Saturday. I was having lunch with a friend of mine. Who I'd met through the Gaga things. I was before trying to figuring a way to leak the video.
Right.
Remember Jackie Fuchs
mm-hmm.
that was she used to be in The Runaways. And mm-hmm. She's a brilliant lawyer too, really, and she's a good friend of mine. And I sent it to her because I thought that video would also help her, because she had just written that Huffington Post piece about being raped by her manager. Mm-hmm. Remember? And so. We became friends after that, and I was having lunch with her, like, right after this other thing didn't work out. And she goes, wait a second, my cousin had just wrote this movie about Thurgood Marshall, that Reggie Hudlin's directing. And I'm like, oh, I love Reggie Hudlin. I met him at the Oscars during Gaga, so all this stuff, there's no accidents.
There's no accidents. And let me just pause for 1 second. That is such a huge takeaway, that everybody that you meet, Diane, you're listening, you're open, you're thinking about how can this fit together.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not missing any opportunities. You're taking the baton and running with it every time. As successful as you are, you're still doing this.
Yeah,
there
are
people.
I do it today.
There are people that are getting started that are just throwing their hands up saying it's too fucking hard.
You can't.
I can't do it.
So I call. So I found out about that. I'm like, oh, you know, I'd love to do something for that. So I call Reggie. And he sent me the script. He goes, I'd be honored if you wrote a song. I read the script and literally went in the office next day, and that chorus just came to me.
Wow.
And I was like, I hope I'm not stealing that, because it's so fucking good. Like, it just sounds like it was always there, right? You know those kind of songs?
Yes.
And I called Reggie. I go, you're not going to listen to this. And he, like, just loved it.
That's the thing about you. That's why I asked the question, do you have just a big closet full of songs? Because every time you would go away, anytime you and I have ever done anything together, you go away, or if I even mention something, you go away, you go, I have the song for that. And you come back the next day, and it's fucking perfect. But you're just doing this on the fly as you go.
Yeah. I sit there and I write something. I get inspired. You know, I don't always get inspired, but I got really inspired by that movie.
Well, it's a great movie. Well, let's listen to a little bit of it.
Yeah. And it became an anthem.
Yep. So how did you find Andre Day and Common?
This is crazy. Okay, so by the way, the song's become an anthem for so many things and Stand Up for Cancer.
Isn't that great?
Became their song. Yes, I love it. I thought – the weird thing is I thought Andra Day would be the perfect artist. Mainly – I love her. She's a great singer. And then this other thing didn't end up working out that I did. I thought, you know what? I want Andra to do this song.
Was the other thing with Andra?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I thought, let me see if she likes it. She loved the song. And then I was talking to Andra's manager. We were talking on the phone. Wouldn't it be cool, like, to put a rapper on this? Because it's like a 60s kind of, you know, throwback. You know, could have been like Sam Cooke. You know, mm-hmm. like I listen to Change Is Gonna Come f***ing 50 times to get in the mood for that song.
Wow.
I wanted to kind of...
Do you do that all the time?
No, not all the time, but I wanted to get in the... Like, I almost wanted to go back in time. And I wrote Turn Back Time. I wanted to go back and just... Because I love those records. Those are soul music's my favorite music. And so I listened to that over and over. Anyway, so I'm on the phone with her manager, and we're going, God, wouldn't that be cool, like, to do something so weird, like putting a rapper on, like, a genre where rap didn't even exist at that time, right? But it just makes it really cool and weird. And you know, I think, I don't know if it's him or me that thought Common. I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea because Common has a lot to say,
mm-hmm.
and he's great. And so a week later, I was going to Sundance, and sitting right in back of me is Common.
Oh, no way.
I'm like, never want to waste an opportunity.
This is the theme.
Yeah.
This is the theme for everybody listening. Never waste an opportunity.
No, and I told him about the song. I sang him the chorus. He goes, oh, my
on
God.
On the plane.
On the plane. Sorry, people that were around him. I'm not very good. So I sang it to him, and he goes, get me the demo now. So I just get off the phone. I mean, get off the plane. The first thing I do is just, you know, get that demo and get his email. Get it to him. He, like, next day I have 10 missed calls from Common. You know, like, he goes, I have to do this. I have to do this song, you know. And so, you know, he got on the record, and it was another thing of label not wanting to put it out.
Why? What is it with a label not wanting to put it out?
Because she didn't have an album, and her label was thinking, like, it's like, hey, did you ever, like, realize now is kind of, like, time for singles? It's not really
right.
about albums as much. I mean, although we all love albums.
Sure.
But we're in the era of the single. And so, but they were like, I don't know what it was, but, you know, it came out. It came out, and it became this became used for everything, licensed for everything, and used for, you know, they sang it at the,
yeah.
you know, the, what was that, March for Life. It was mm-hmm. the big song there that, you know, and a lot of other things. So, and Heroes used it,
and
CNN.
And then another important documentary comes your way
yeah.
in 2018, the RBG documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
So how does that come about? And
again, that was Bonnie Greenberg.
Okay.
Like, who I worked on with, on
sure.
Hunting Ground. And, you know, I saw the movie, and it wasn't a finished movie yet. And I'm like, yeah, I'd be so honored. And I loved the movie. I mean, it's a great movie.
Yes.
You know, she sent me a thank you card.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, I thought, like, what's the perfect lyric for her? I mean, she's a fighter.
Yeah.
You know, I'll fight that war for you. Again, I don't see what that war is. See, I keep the songs
right.
open.
Just I'll fight.
I don't see what something is that you're standing up for.
Right.
And someone in the LA Times, the music writer, kind of put me, like, he you know, ragged on me for that when he was talking about the songs that could get nominated. And that song of Diane Warren's that is that vague song that I was like, I got his email, I wrote him back. I mean, like, well, yeah, I kind of like
it's
to leave
purposeful.
The song open. You know, that's
for anybody
cool. that's your
to
opinion.
Interpret. Right.
Yeah, and that's why the songs become, they have other lives.
Yeah.
You know? And
for a long, long
yeah.
time. Because I'm telling you, I've been to weddings recently where people have played I Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
Yeah. It's
and How Do I Live?
Yeah, nice.
Both Jerry Bruckheimer action movies, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, both songs that make
and
no sense.
And have lived all these, you know, 30 years.
You know
years.
That both songs were used in another movie?
No
you
way.
A funny story.
Yeah.
Remember that movie, The Sweetest Thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the director, what's his name, Roger Cumble?
Roger Cumble.
So he comes to my office because, oh, my God. So they had shot this scene. Do you remember when she's giving a blowjob to somebody and he has a cock ring on? Am I supposed to talk about this?
Sure.
Okay, so.
It's not like there's
my,
no.
But Jeff is out there having a heart attack. My publicist is
it's
having a heart
totally
attack.
Totally fine. This is exactly what I was hoping.
But it's a movie.
Diane, do you know how many dinners we've had where these exact
yeah,
words have been spoken?
We get into it. So is Jeff having a heart attack? Call the ambulance. Okay, no, but it's true. It happened. Look, it's
okay.
true. It really happened.
It's okay.
So I guess they had shot the scene without getting permission, and the director's going, okay, I hope you're going to let us use the song. And so she's saying, anyways, so it's caught in her throat. And they're saying, someone's saying, and then there's a fireman and all these people, and they're going, well, just sing something. And she goes, oh, no. This is the thing, but sung with... sorry. It's real. But
no,
it's,
don't and then be they sorry. All, it's
wait,
amazing.
And then they all start singing along to it.
Right.
And then at the end, because I guess Roger was a fan of mine, then they sing How Do I Live?
Oh.
And I got paid so well for that.
That's so
you know?
Amazing.
And it's a, and
just
I,
goes to show that when you leave a song vague,
yeah, exactly.
Great things
Who
can
knew?
Happen.
Who knew? It was, it became a cock ring song. You know? No, but it was like, how about the funniest things? The director going like, thinking like, I was going to like not do it. I go, I'm just mad that you didn't let me be one of those people extras singing along.
The fact that Roger Cumble did not know how fun and great you are and down for the joke is hilarious to
it
me
because
he's awesome.
No
he's
pun intended
really,
on that.
He's a really, really good dude.
Down on, yeah, sorry.
So. I'll Fight Then was the song.
Back to Cocklings or Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Was Jennifer Hudson your first choice?
Yeah.
Nail it every time,
I just thought because if Ruth Bader Ginsburg's voice, if she could.
Wow, that's
she,
so deep, cool.
Did she be like, she has this inner black badass, you
that's
know,
awesome.
That would be her voice, right?
Let's listen to it.
Yeah.
I'll Fight.
So
I love all the thought you put into not just your songs. Obviously, you're incredibly talented. You're in the Hall of Fame. But I love the business thought you put into it. I love the casting thought you put into all these
choices
you've made.
Yeah, because it's all important. And you know what's really cool, by the way, since Emmy voting is kind of coming up?
Right.
Because it's a documentary. And like same with Hunting Ground, I ended up winning the Emmy the first time
right.
I was nominated.
So
I lost the Oscar for Till It Happens to You, but I did win the Emmy.
So documentaries, just documentaries, or anything on? Is it also things on Netflix? Can they be nominated for both, or just documentaries can be nominated for both?
That's a good
point. By the way, you should just keep doing documentaries then.
I mean, yeah, never mind. It has to obviously be theatrically released, right? So yeah, whether it's a Netflix one or in this case, both of these were CNN. Documentaries.
And they were both released theatrically also?
Oh, yeah, I mean, Ruth, the RBG movie did like $15 million almost, you know?
I did see it on CNN.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great movie. And so, I mean, I'm technically eligible
for
an Emmy, so I'm kind of hoping
That's
I
great.
Get
Good
another
luck.
Shot. Thank you.
Good luck. And then I've had Devon Franklin on this podcast, who's an amazing human being.
Yeah. Great movie, right?
Great
did you
movie.
See it?
I did.
It really is well done.
Great movie.
Yeah.
And I love him, and I love everything
he
has
to say. You love
that
song in there.
And I love the messages. And so you have the actress singing this song.
Well, I had to be talked into that.
Really?
Yeah, because so I wrote the song for – like when I saw the movie. I mean, I love
the
movie.
Was that an incoming call from Devon to you? How did you get
it? It was Devon, and there was a music supervisor named Andrea von Forster.
Have you worked with Andrea before?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'd worked before, and she's a friend of mine, and she had told me about the movie, and it was a Fox movie. I think there was a couple of people there that didn't want me to do it, but she fought for me.
Can I ask you a question? Does you owning the publishing become a problem for these studios?
It depends. I mean, everything's negotiable.
Right.
You know,
okay.
Like, you know.
Like anything.
like pay me. but, you know, I mean, anyway, so with Breakthrough, you know, I saw the movie, and I saw it in rough form again, but I loved it. And the thing is, it's quote-unquote faith-based, but what's wrong with faith? It's not like it's shoving that down your throat. It's actually a beautiful, positive, true story that, like,
yeah.
I mean, we need some uplifting stuff right now.
For sure.
It's so dark, you know. And I thought there was a scene in the movie where they all stand up, all the people that never gave up on this kid. I mean, the kid was dead, you know, fell into the ice, was dead for an hour. Like, and the community never gave up. His mom never gave up. And, you know, at the end, they all stand up. The preacher, the pastor goes, everybody stand up. And so that stayed in my mind. And then I went to the office and, you know, went to work. And I'm like, God, what am I going to write? And then that scene kept playing in my mind. And I came up with that chorus. And it was one of those ones that kind of made me cry. Like, it was just beautiful. Now, then I wrote this song that I loved, you know. And then they go, we need one Chrissy Metz to sing it. Like, oh.
Why did they? Why?
Because she stars in the movie. But wait,
no, I know.
Ends,
lots of people star in movies that don't sing their songs.
But I didn't realize because I don't watch a lot of TV, so I'd never seen This Is Us. So I'm like, oh, can't we just get like Carrie Underwood?
Yeah, you can get anybody.
Like somebody big. But wait, but it ends really good. So the weird thing is, all the people I wanted to sing the song, sang the song with her on the ACMs, like Carrie Underwood, Lauren Elaine, all these people. Like,
yeah.
It's so ironic. So they go, no, we really want Chrissy to do it. I was like, I go, what if we put Chrissy with Carrie Underwood? Or I'm trying to think of something.
Right.
And then they go, well, just try her. I go, you know what? I will. So I met her in my studio. I put her with one of my really good producers, a really great vocal producer. And I left because, you know, I'm a bad liar. I don't want to be putting negative energy eons
and pacing in the back of your head and your hands.
Yeah. No, I left. I left. I came back a few hours later and they played it back to me. And I'm like, what? Holy shit. I don't want anybody else singing on this with you. Like, you're fucking great. Like, she's so warm and soulful. Her voice is great.
Let's listen. Know? I'm standing with you, Chrissy Metz.
Yeah.
So just you picked out one moment in a movie and then that sticks with you. And that seems to be like a recurring theme. Like you find one image or one.
I just think that kind of and that concept, you know, that was the visual, but it also worked on other levels,
sure.
You know, because, you know, from Chrissy's, from the mom's, you know, or it could be, that's the cool thing with a song. It could be from all the point of views, you know, all their point of views. That's Chrissy's, that's the mother's character, that's the people in the community's character. And then you go outside of the movie, and that song, I think,
it could be anybody. Just standing with your spouse, standing with your best friend, standing with someone going through a hard time.
They premiered it on the ACMs.
I saw it.
Right? It was beautiful.
It was right after.
And by the way, she had f***ing balls. Listen, she'd never sung live before.
Yeah.
And I mean, and she's on stage with Carrie Underwood and these, and by the way, and singing to an audience there of, you can't fake it in country.
No.
Those are real musicians, real, they're not auto-tuned, you know. You know what I mean?
Right.
So to have the balls to do that, like that was powerful. I respect her. She was brave.
She was great.
But their reason for using the song there was about women standing together.
Right.
So there
something
you go.
Totally different.
Something
exactly.
That had nothing to do with the movie.
Right.
You know?
Which is like all your songs now are being used in anthems in different ways.
Yeah, and they're doing something. I think she's playing it on the Red Nose Day with a choir. So then it becomes something else.
That's great.
You know? So.
And so your latest project is a song called Forward Motion on this movie Late Night with that Mindy Kaling has coming out.
I'm excited about that.
And it just sold huge at Sundance to Amazon, correct?
Yeah.
And so walk me through that song and kind of what happened with that and how that came about.
You know, I saw
it's a tiny movie and they did it independently. So how do they?
Yeah,
how do
I
they
think
get
it's going to be because my friend, one of my really good friends, Leslie Barber, she's an amazing composer and a really good friend of mine, and she told me about the movie and she goes, "Do you want to see it? Maybe you can write a song for it." So we were at my studio and we watched it over there, and I'm like, "Oh my God, I definitely want to do it." You know, so I started Forward Motion.
Okay, let's listen to Forward Motion. It's in the movie Late Night.
See, it's a cool song, right?
Yeah.
And it's different. You know, it's up-tempo. It's, you know, it's just about, it's kind of like my theme song. Because I'm looking backward with you, but it's like, I just want to look forward. I like to move forward and keep it going.
That's definitely everything I've ever known about you, is you're always about the next song.
Yeah.
But that's great.
Yeah.
And that's such a huge lesson for everybody out there, is not to rest on your laurels.
No,
you
God,
certainly
I don't even
don't.
Rest for a second on anything.
So just walk me through a typical Diane Warren day, and I'm going to be respectful
of
your
time. It's really exciting.
Tell me.
I have like a nice blended mocha at the Coffee Bean, and I go to work. I just go to work.
And where does that mean? You have a studio at your house?
No, I leave my house. I'm never at
my
house.
You have to, right?
Yeah, I don't want to be at my house.
And you drive to your studio?
Yeah, I drive to my writing room, right, which I have an office. And I also have a building now.
I bought
a building down the street, so I go on my scooter back and forth all day long.
Didn't some LA Times writer call your office the cave?
The cave, yeah. Now then it became the cave, yeah. So and I've never cleaned it. I've been there forever, written a lot of really big songs in there. And then I have another writing room across the hall that I'm in a lot.
And what is it? Seriously, what does it look like? What does your room
look like?
It looks
like part of the earthquake from 1994 is half the stuff is still on the floor.
Right.
So it looks like an earthquake hit it.
And what is the chair? Are you sitting at a desk? At a computer?
No, I'm sitting.
At a keyboard?
No, I have cassettes and a Walkman and stuff.
No way.
Yeah, I really do. You got to come by sometime.
I do. I have to. I can't believe I've never been there.
Yeah.
And so then it's just writing and being inspired all day.
Yeah, it's just, you know,
goofing around on your 12 string and your keyboards.
I don't play my 12 string a whole lot. I have other guitars. That one's too hard to play.
Okay. And it's playing all day and waiting for inspiration to strike or thinking about the movies.
I don't wait. You know, it's not even, a lot of times I'm not even doing something for a movie. I'm just writing a song that I want to write. Mm-hmm. And I think, oh, who's this good for?
Right.
You know, or it's a movie. Or, you know, this morning I met some producer of this movie. He was talking to me about something that sounded good. Maybe I'll do something for that.
Well, I want to unpack that for a second because you say you write a song and you think, who would it be good for?
Yeah,
and then
an
you
artist.
Just reach out and you call
yeah,
and you
yeah.
do it.
Or that's they, amazing. Yeah, yeah. If yeah, why not?
That's amazing. And so what advice would you give for somebody who wants to become a songwriter now, given the way the business is?
Yeah, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Now there's like these writing camps where there's like 10 people.
But if you were somebody listening to this that was thinking about, man, I'd love to try to do it, or producing music or just being in the music business.
Just do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, just do it. Don't think about it.
And just write a bunch of songs and record them.
Yeah,
and
why
then
not?
Look for a publisher just like you did.
Yeah. You know, or be an artist or be a producer signing artists and stuff.
And again, you only have to know one person. Like you said, my cousin knows this, wrote a movie that Reggie Hudlin's directing.
That literally was like, I was bummed out about this other thing not working.
That's amazing.
And I was like, you know, man, this thing didn't work. I'm so bummed. And she was, oh my God. I mean, it was that crazy.
Because a lot of people do sit there and think, oh, I have to know Diane Warren to get in the business, or I have to know, Steven Tyler. You don't. You just know somebody that may know somebody that may know somebody
exactly.
and follow that trail. Like
exactly.
you do. Get on a plane
yeah.
and go to New York in case Lady Gaga says yes.
Yeah.
I always ask this question at the end, and it's generally to people who work on movie sets.
Okay.
And I always say, best day on set. But just if I ask Diane Warren, just best day you can remember. First thing that comes to mind where it's like, holy shit. This is what I'm doing this for.
Every day.
That's amazing. Is it the writing or listening or seeing it performed or all three?
My favorite is coming up with something.
What? The idea?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's my favorite. Coming up with something great. And then I kind of figure out, how do I make this into something? But yeah, that's what I like the best.
And when you're watching your songs played on screen, is it joyful or is it, I think I could have made that better?
No, it's joyful.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you celebrate a lot your victories and when you have successes?
Yeah, I mean, like it's kind of fun. I stay up all night, you know, before the nominations. We've done it how many times now? Wiener. How many times have we stayed up? We did it this year. I have parties. I have a sleepless sleepover that I have a bunch of my friends come over.
Good.
Waiting for the 5:20 in the morning, you know. And I did that for this year and then last year. And then with Till It Happens to You.
I think I've done
four of those.
That's so great.
I think I'm going to do one this year too.
It's important to celebrate all these, in most people's cases, little victories, but in your case, it's massive victories.
I think every victory is a big victory. Even a little victory is a big victory.
Well, Diane, I love you so much. Thank you for doing this.
Too.
This has been so much fun.
I know, right?
And I'm sorry to just make you look backward for a minute. But
no, it's fun.
Sure,
we're talking forward.
I'm sure.
Forward motion.
I'm sure everything going forward is going to be spectacular.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Producer's Guide. We're produced by Kirsten Woodward and Steve Delamater. I want to answer all your questions about the business, so make sure to tweet me at Todd_Garner or use #Producer's Guide on Twitter. See you next week. Thanks for listening to The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner. Download new episodes every Thursday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.